Avner Dorman, an Israeli-born composer, has a couple of strikingly different pieces premiering in the United States. The first, Spices, Perfumes, Toxins, is a concerto he wrote for the percussion duo Perkadoo. It will be performed with a symphony. It's to be performed with a symphony orchestra, and it premiered last night at Avery Fisher Hall at Lincoln Center. There are three more concerts scheduled tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday. And I'm very pleased that they bring Avner Dorman to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
You have chosen to represent flavors and aromas in the piece that premiered in the United States, anyway, last night. Were you thinking about synesthesia when you were composing it?
I wasn't really thinking about synesthesia when I composed it, but I think I kind of have a little bit of it naturally. So in a certain way, I do relate certain notes and certain colors of certain instruments to certain colors of painting or nature.
And some people connect them to smells.
That's true. I do not experience that usually. But
in interviews, you've mentioned the auras and colors that different instruments evoke. Do you visualize music in your imagination that way?
As a composer, I sort of think in notes more than visualize music. It could go the other way for me. Like when I see a beautiful painting, I might think about it as sounds. So I would say the synesthesia goes the other way more.
Although you have to be aware of how a listener responds to the music.
That's true.
They're not thinking in terms of little dots on a page.
That's true. I think one of the things when I started writing this piece, the idea of coming up with these three substances or groups of substances, that each of them is attractive but also dangerous in a certain way if you do too much of it. I thought it would be a good thing for me as an inspiration, but also, as you say, it connects the audience to it.
Well, I understood spices and perfumes, but not toxins. Toxins are poisons, aren't they?
Correct, but some toxins, like alcoholic drinks and other toxins we won't mention on the radio, are attractive to us humans, but are quite dangerous as well.
And you tie them all together in the fact that they can be connected to seduction?
In a certain way, yes. I think they sort of give us meaning, the meaning of life, something that you really like and want and gives you pleasure, but you should be aware of too much of it.
Now, when I think of seduction, I usually don't think of percussion.
Why
I think
not?
Of violins. I think of, the softer instruments.
Well, first of all, some percussion has actually the widest range of dynamics. It can be the loudest instrument, of course, but it can also be very, very soft. And especially instruments like vibraphone, marimba, glockenspiel, all these instruments that are melodic instruments, they actually can, if you use very soft mallets, they can go very soft. I also think that seduction can take different forms. In the second movement, Perfumes, it's actually a very, very gentle movement, mostly. But seduction doesn't have to be very gentle always.
You've said that you hope the piece will take the traditional concerto and turn it on its head.
Now, I think it sort of does.
It's being performed in tandem with Bartók's Concerto for Orchestra. Wasn't it Bartók's intention to turn the concerto form on its head as well?
Oh, yes, of course.
But did you choose to have the two perform together?
I did not choose that, but I think it's a brilliant programming idea, and I'm a big admirer of Bartók. I wrote my doctorate on Bartók, so for me it's just the perfect match. Of course, it's a big honor to be with that piece.
Were you thinking of Bartók at all because when you're composing this? Because both works are concerned with rhythm and timbre.
Again, I think at this point I don't think specifically about Bartók, but I've studied so much of his music. And also, I think that he was sort of the pioneer of this idea of combining music from different parts of the world and studying improvisation, folk music, speech, singing, all these things that, at a certain point in the century, it looked like the Schoenberg or Stravinsky schools are going to be the dominant schools. I am not sure that's true today. I think Bartók was actually a lot ahead of his time.
And you talk about combining music from all over the world. You're from Israel.
Right.
And so I'm assuming that you grew up with Middle Eastern music, not just Arabic music, but obviously Sephardic and Ashkenazic music.
Right.
You studied here at Juilliard with John Carigliano. You also studied with a former Soviet composer in Israel. All of that going into the big pot?
I would say yes, definitely. I grew up listening to a lot of pop music as well, rock, American rock, a lot of Indian music, something I like very much too, Carnatic, South Indian classical music. So, yeah, I think just like in any period, whatever you grow up with is what stays with you.
Well, weren't your parents musicians?
My father is a bassoon player and a conductor.
So this is the family business. Was it impossible to not think about sound and all of its permutations growing up in that environment?
Probably. I didn't even notice, but probably.
Now, most composers start off playing an instrument and then slip into composing. Is that what happened with you?
I would actually say that for me, it was the other way around. I did play the cello when I was 9 for about a year, but I didn't like it very much. It was too difficult. But I do have recordings from a very early age, from about that age, where I would take these tape recorders and walkie-talkies and all sort of sounds from the environment and sort of remix them again and again and create these pretty avant-garde pieces for a 9-year-old.
And so you start off with musique concrète and then you moved backward into the symphonic approach.
Exactly. Yeah, I started with musique concrète without knowing, you know, I was 9. So,
Well, how much does a piece like this change in performance? What happens when Perkadu and Zubin Mehta and the New York Philharmonic take over? Do you hear something that you... sometimes playwrights will tell me that, or people have written film scripts, that they're surprised by what happens to their words when actors take them and personalize them.
Well, there's definitely a lot of interpretation and performance that goes on. I would say with an orchestra especially, and with soloists that I know very well, and I've worked with them for many years, it's actually probably the most... you can be the most control freak, much more than a playwright, because you don't just write the sentence. I tell them how quickly to say the sentence and where to put the accent and who comes in exactly when. And they sort of have no choice of when to do it. But on the other hand, an orchestra like the New York Philharmonic and a conductor like Zubin Mehta, they really do put in a certain expression and enthusiasm that... you know, I sort of dream of it and hope for it when I write the piece, but it's a great pleasure to hear it, of course.
Well, this piece has been performed elsewhere.
It has.
With different conductors.
Right.
How different would it sound?
It does sound different with different conductors. One of the things I love about Mehta is that his sense of inner rhythm is really almost not human. You know, it's sort of beyond what most people can achieve. Holding an orchestra is such a... it's such a large ensemble, it's very hard to keep the rhythm so strong and groovy the whole time.
Well, he also has conducted the symphony orchestra in Israel, hasn't he?
Yeah, many years. Yes.
So I suspect that he's very familiar with some of the source material.
Yes, and especially the first movement is very much influenced by Indian music, classical Indian music. So I think that he feels even more at home with that.
And in this case... how much do things that are non-musical play a role? You talked about the other kinds of sounds that you listened to when you were a kid. You've also said that your music is influenced by the Hebrew language.
That was sort of a result of a pretty complicated conversation with that interviewer. But I think thought... is very much influenced by the language that one speaks. I think there's a big difference between different languages, and Hebrew specifically, because it's based on very small roots that make up most of the words, and there aren't that many roots, and you sort of alter them almost spontaneously, and people can understand. So in a way, that's very much like motivic development in concert music, and I think it did influence my it does influence my thought process.
I wonder if there's a graduate paper in this, the influence of the Russian language on Russian music, and German on German music, and French on French music, Italian on Italian music.
I think there have been some...
and the differences between British music because of British English and American English.
I think a great example, I don't know if there's a paper, I think a great example is Mozart, who wrote several operas in Italian and several in German. And in Italian, the phrase always ends on the weak beats. Because, you know, when you say pizza or when you say, you know, Italia, it's always after the beat. In German, the notes always end on the beat. So I think it's a very different melodic style when he writes in German and Italian.
My guest is Avner Dorman, whose Peace, Spices, Perfumes, Toxins Concerto, I guess I should say, is receiving its American premiere, and you can see it tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at Avery Fisher Hall at Lincoln Center. What about the second piece that's being premiered in the United States? That's actually an older piece, isn't it?
No, that is not an older piece. It's actually newer.
The Sonata for Number 2 for piano and violin.
Yes, that's a shorter piece and for a smaller ensemble. It was just premiered in Tokyo 2 months ago. Violinist Sayaka Shoji commissioned it and premiered it, and she will play it at Weill Recital Hall.
Well, although the piano is a percussion instrument, it can't get as percussive. And you can't get as percussive with a piano and a violin as you can with the whole range of percussive instruments that Perkadu use.
Not at all. And this piece is, it has two movements, and the first one is very, very ethereal and very lyrical. The second one is more percussive, but the first one is actually very, very ethereal. So, yeah, it's a very different piece.
Could you imagine writing something that isn't percussive? Because rhythm just seems to be so important to the piece that's being played for the next few nights.
I think I've written some pieces that are not so percussive. I would say that percussive, and I would say the attacks of notes is something that is very important to me. And that is something that string instruments, for example, are slower than percussion and piano, and brass even slower. So definitely for me, attacks are an important part of every note. So yeah, percussiveness is a big part of my music.
Well, you mentioned earlier the almost total control over music for a while by the people who followed Schoenberg. My feeling is Schoenberg is getting a bad rap because everybody has rejected the 12-tone row, and he wrote some pretty great music, and other music, pretty great music was written in that form with that approach. But now we have moved in another direction.
Right.
And
right.
How does that apply to you?
Well, I think to a certain degree, I fit more in sort of the newer direction that music is going, in the sense that
this people, is almost like the return to the figure in painting.
And I think the idea of really exploring other cultures other than the Western culture and thinking of art in different ways than the traditional Western way, I think it's something that is just part of our times. I definitely agree that Schoenberg and some of his followers have gotten just too much of a bad rep because exactly what you said, I completely agree.
As a child, I understand you were interested in math and chess as well. Your undergraduate degree was in physics.
Well, it was a joint undergraduate where I studied physics and music. But I didn't actually go to the university before I found this special program that I could do that. I love math, and I still love chess.
Well, isn't math the basis of composing music? In the end, I know when I tried the little bit that I once tried, I realized that I had to get a lot better at fractions than I was.
I would say that it's very, very similar. And you just look at notation. You look at a big orchestral score. It just looks like a very, very complicated graph. So, yeah, definitely.
So what happens when you sit down? You got a commission. You got a commission for piano and violin piece. Are there things that are already floating in your head, or do you start with a blank slate?
It really depends on the piece. Sometimes I have some ideas, and I sort of work them into the specific ensemble that I have that I've accepted a commission for. A lot of times what I would try to do if I'm writing for a specific soloist or a specific conductor, I sort of try to capture their aura. So it's not just a percussion concerto or a violin sonata, but it's a violin sonata for this violinist. So sort of trying to capture her aura and sort of what is special about her and the violin, the connection between them. I find that very, it's a great inspiration for me.
Now, you're from Israel, and you served in the Israeli army.
That's correct.
In recent years, especially in Europe, there's been a movement to ban Israeli artists, even if they are doing non-political work. You've been receiving an awful lot of awards, so I'm sure you're not all that worried. But is that of concern to you, the politicization of art?
I think the politicization of art from that direction is a concern. As you said, I'm getting tons of performances in Europe, so I really have not had any concern in that regard. You know, I don't know how much we as artists, I think we can make people think about things and certainly bring a message to the world. But the idea that banning artists from a certain country, especially a country that definitely has artists who speak against the government, is useful, I think that's not a very smart way to go.
After these pieces are performed here, where are you going? Where is the other piece being going to be performed?
I'm sorry.
You're here, yes, worrying about these four performances,
right.
One last night and then, yes, and the one tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. And then what happens?
Well, I come back to New York to hear the Violin Sonata at Carnegie Hall on April 6th. And then I have quite a few performances that I'm going to miss. But my next big performance in America is in Los Angeles at the Hollywood Bowl in July.
And you try to attend the performances or the rehearsals as well?
I try to as much as I can, but I also need to write new pieces. So, for example, with Percadu, if it's not a major orchestra like the New York Philharmonic, I would probably not go at this point because they know the piece very well. There's a good recording. And I think they can do just as well without me.
We're going to dip into that recording now because we didn't open with it, but I think that after we've talked a lot about spices, perfumes, and toxins, listeners will be curious to know more about it and how it sounds. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Avner Dorman, who at 25 became the youngest composer to win Israel's prestigious Prime Minister's Award, and in the same year he was awarded the Golden Feather Award from the Israeli Society of Composers and Publishers. He's also received several international awards from ASCAP and the Asian Composers League. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me here.